Welcome to Sonic Artifacts, offering the best deals and interesting finds in affordable vintage music equipment in Los Angeles and New York City. This week on our interview series, we sit down with Rob Banta of Gemini Pickups. Working out of Newburgh, New York, Rob is making some of the most exciting and creative hand-drawn pickups out there today. Catching the eye of players such as Mark Knopfler, as well as offering custom order work, Gemini is about finding the right pickup for you. This is your host, Brian Chalum, signing in from LA.
And your co-host, Max Braun from Brooklyn.
Rob, thanks so much for coming on the show.
I'm here.
He's here. Present. He made it.
Present.
How you been, man?
Dynamite. I feel never felt better in my entire life. I'm at peak Rob right now.
That sounds pretty good.
You're seeing me at peak. I'm not even joking. Now I'm getting a little emotional now that I'm realizing I'm not being full of shit right now. No, I'm doing great. Things are great. Peak Rob.
That's awesome, man. Before the show, we were talking about how not much has really changed, you know, with the lockdowns and everything for you. Business keeps on rolling, you know, as a one-man show here. Can you tell us how this whole thing got started?
Yeah, man. Well, I was born June 4th, 1982. Approximately 6 feet two, about 160 pounds. I started playing guitar when I was 10. And if you do the math on that, you would think that I was really good at guitar, and you would be wrong. But and I pretty much immediately started taking them apart. And I always did that and always did that. And I moved to Austin, Texas after college. I worked at Collings Guitars for about 5 years. And from a friend at Collings, I bought a winder, pickup winder. It was a first generation Shatton winder. It was like the first commercial consumer, whatever it's called, winder you could get. And I bought it from him because I had sold my house, so I had a bunch of money burning a hole in my pocket, and then I didn't use it for like 2 years, and I didn't like know where it was or whatever. But I'd always been interested in guitar pickups, especially the crate, like the weirder the better. Like, I was fascinated by the old made in Japan stuff, mainly because it was just so, it was different, and it was like, you know, it was just something unusual. And I would kind of, you know, I always kind of thought about building guitars and working on guitars. And I was like, man, it'd be really cool to use like these pickups. But, you know, if you rewind them, then they'll just sound like normal pickups and it'll be great. So that was kind of the idea from like, you know, when I was a teenager or whatever. And then I finally got the winder out and started tinkering with some stuff. And it's like, I remember being in like college or whatever, right after college, it was like, you could get on eBay and you could get a shoebox full of made in Japan pickups for like $20. Nobody cared about them at all. And, so I did like just that. I had like hundreds of these pickups. And so I started taking them apart and rewinding them and putting them back together and listening to them and kind of seeing how they were built and which ones sounded good and which ones sounded bad. Why does this one sound good and why does this one sound bad? And it's like, well, this is how a Strat pickup is made. Why in the world did they do it like this? And kind of figuring that stuff out just kind of hands-on. And I just really kept going from there. And that was in about, I say that I started the company April 1st, 2015, and that's basically true, but it is also April Fool's, but it is basically true. It's right around that time is when I very first started winding pickups. And I just kind of kept progressing from there and learning and just kind of consuming as much information as I could. There's a few good books out there, but mainly just trying to check stuff out as you know, dissecting it and hands-on as much as I could. And so me and my wife left Austin in 2016, like July of 2016. We had Marshall December 8th, 2016. Bought the house. I was working at a cabinet shop. I was still doing pickups, you know, as a hobby, but I was, you know, I was winding them for people and rewinding them, and, you know, it kind of kept progressing. So then January 1st, 2019, I started doing it full time solely, and it's been amazing. The response has been amazing. My customers are like the best I could possibly hope for. The builders I work with are all really, really great. The players, the shops, everybody. And, you know, have just been trying to push it since then. And, you know, with a young kid and a marriage and a house, and been pretty much by myself most of the time. I've had guys help me, you know, part-time. I've got a guy right now helping me. We're basically trying to get him to full-time and really kind of build the shop and the brand, and because it's happening. And, you know, it was like before I started, I was just like, I remember saying to myself in complete certainty, the boutique pickup market is saturated. And you know what I mean? Like, obviously it's saturated. How many there's too many pickups. There's too many pickup winders. But through almost total luck, I found a little niche, or what I was doing fit into a niche. And I kind of found an empty area to operate in and give people some stuff that maybe they couldn't find elsewhere at a price that made sense to me. And it's been awesome.
In that little area, you're speaking about the gold foils in particular?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like I was talking to a buddy the other day. I was like, I wouldn't just say gold foils, but just weird stuff. I do weird stuff in a standard size. If that was my one sentence, if that was my elevator pitch or my one sentence explanation of what I do, it's like I do weird stuff, but it's in a standard size and it'll drop into your guitar. You know what I mean? It's like I do gold foils, but you can drop them right into your Strat, or you can drop them right into your SG or whatever. And it's like I do kind of the lap steel inspired stuff, but it drops. But it's a standard size. And that was, you know, that just kind of was happening before I really realized it. It's kind of what I was already doing, because I cut my teeth modifying standard stuff or trying to create this stuff with stuff that I could order, because I didn't have a shop yet. Like, you know, I didn't have the laser cutter. I didn't have the suppliers that could, you know, I could buy this stuff from or get it made. So it was all standard stuff that I was modifying to just because I wanted to hear what it would sound like, you know, and it just kind of happened like that. It was great.
What sort of old you talking about on eBay? You used to buy like a shoebox full of pickups. Which ones were you into?
Oh,
which
man,
ones did you find were the cool ones?
Anything. I just wanted to. I loved it all. Like, you know, it was, you know, the old, you know, the stuff I was seeing back then was the old Harmony stuff, which was primarily Rowe Industries, D'Armond. And then there was the K stuff, which they made their stuff in-house, and their stuff was all super cool. And just, you know, anything that wasn't a Strat pickup or a humbucker, I was just like, whoa, what's this? This looks really cool. This is super funky, you know. And then obviously like the old Tesco stuff, and the Gaiatone stuff, but then all the other brands too, even though a lot of the stuff was made by the same company. But And then the European stuff was really cool too. I just loved the, you know, I mean, I loved the look because I didn't know what they sounded like. You know, it's like I couldn't hear them. But I was just really turned on to stuff that was unusual because that was kind of the guitars I was attracted to. So, you know, you could get the Zippo, like the Harmony Zippo pickups, the Rowe D'Armand Zippo pickups. You know, I had a bunch of those, tons of Japanese stuff. The gold foils weren't even popular yet. Really, they were kind of getting ready to blow up, but you could get any of that stuff. And then I would just rip it apart and break half of them, but I could kind of start to see what was going on and how they did things. And it's kind of like, I didn't learn from Strat pickups, you know, it's like I learned from these other things. And so it was like, that was like what was normal, you know, to see that stuff. So that was kind of how I started doing things.
So that really informed your building from that perspective point of the Japanese pickups or the off, like you said, not the standard Strat, not the standard PAF humbucker. So I'd love for you to break down the basic elements of a pickup and the, you know, the few components that are that relationship interlocking together that really changes everything.
Right. I should have written down like the correct terms for all that stuff. Well, listen, man. So like around the turn of the century, electromagnetism was the cutting it, or the turn of the night, like 1800 to night, you know, the 19th century, not the 20th century. Electromagnetism was like the cutting edge of physics and the sciences. Like that's what Einstein was studying before he got into relativity, was electromagnetism. So you got to be really smart to understand it. And I'm not that smart. I'm just handsome and I sound smart. But anyway, it's a guitar pickup is, I think the technical term for it is a something inducer, because it induces a current. And if a conducting material exists inside of a magnetic field, and then that magnetic field fluctuates, it will induce a current. So let's think about what's happening. Just picture a Strat pickup, because everybody knows what that looks like. And kind of, you see the six pole pieces. Those are six Alnico rod magnets. There's a coil of very fine copper wire wrapped around that, about, you know, let's say 8,000 turns of 42 gauge wire. 42 gauge wire is about as thick as the human hair. So there's 8,000 turns around that. Now, there's the six Alnico magnets. There's six strings that are primarily iron. So they're magnetic too. The copper wire is not magnetic, but it's full of electrons. It's sitting in that magnetic field. When you pluck the string, that moves back and forth, and it pushes and drags those electrons back and forth. And it pushes that out to the controls, pushes that out to the amplifier. It's a little tiny, tiny, tiny micro voltage, just like what's coming out of the wall at your house. It goes out to the amplifier, and that amplifies it. That's how it works. That's how all magnetic pickups work. And basically, the only things that you're changing around is the physical composition of the pickup itself, what it's made out of, what the cover's made out of, if it has a base plate, if it doesn't have a base plate, the type of magnet that's used, the type of wire that's used. But they're all basically working in the same way. The Strat pickup is pretty much the simplest common pickup that there is out there, because it's just the magnets with the coil wrapped around it. And there's a piece of fiberboard on the top and the bottom, and that acts as the bobbin, and that's it. And you kind of go up from there, like Tele bridge pickups, exactly the same, but it has a steel base plate. Tele neck pickups, exactly the same, but it has a cover on it. And those things make changes too. They use different types of gauges of wire and different types of wire as well. Humbucker goes up from there. I think, well, like, you know, the Strat pickup has 9 parts counting the coil. And like, I think a humbucker has like 30, you know, it's a gadget. It's a gizmo. It's a beautiful piece of engineering, but
they're usually twice the price because of the materials. There's like a lot more materials, as you're saying.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, you got to do it twice. There's 2 coils in there.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's no assembly to it. After you put the bobbin together, there's no assembly to a Strat pickup. Once you wind it, it's you're done. With a humbucker, you have to wind the 2 coils, then you have to put all that junk together. There's like a million parts to those. So the price difference with a humbucker and with like a Strat pickup, that makes sense, and that's comparable. And I feel like they're a lot less forgiving too. You know, it's like, without getting in, like, I don't know, sounding like a snob or getting in trouble, it's like, like, if you do a pretty good job winding a Strat pickup, it's going to sound good. You know what I mean? Just because there's nothing there to screw up, really. But a humbucker's like, you got to finesse it a little bit more. I don't know if I meant anything I just said.
Maybe. Well, it's a very, there's only 3 basic, yeah, 3 or 4 basic elements. Like you said, 9 parts to Strat pickup. So it's like, how much can you screw it up?
Especially if you're hand winding it, you know, it's like, that was what blew me away. It was like, I remember the first pickups I wound that I heard is I rewound a set of pickups for my buddy. And I remember hearing them for the first time and being like, this is insane. I didn't know that they could sound like this. And I kind of knew at the beginning, I was like, this can't just be, I'm not magic. Like, this is the first set of pickups I ever wound and they sound incredible. This is insane.
Can't be this easy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, not that it's easy, but that just like the first time I heard hand wound pickups compared to machine wound pickups. It totally tripped me out, you know, because you got to get pretty, like, to get a new guitar with hand wound pickups in it. First of all, like, no Gibsons are hand wound, which is fine. They've just always been machine wound. But if you want to get like a new Fender that has hand wound pickups in it, you have to go to it's like a custom shop guitar. It's a Fender custom shop. It's like, I don't think they have like a standard model that has hand wound pickups. So you're already up at that level. And a lot of boutique builders, obviously they have, you know, they're using hand wound pickups, but that's boutique guys. That's like a custom guitar, you know? So it's like, we had never heard hand wound pickups before, really. You know, everybody, even guys that had like a nice, even guys that had like a vintage Tele or something, like they were probably from the late 60s or early 70s, and they were, Fender was machine winding all their pickups at that point, you know? So it was like hearing like hand wound pickups for the first time, that was like, if you hear that and like the light bulb goes off and the angels sing and all that stuff, you probably should be a pickup winder. Nobody else would care. But like, I could hear it. It was amazing to me. It blew my mind. I was just like, this is wild.
In terms of, I understand definitely the quality of the parts and what's going on. I own a variety of boutique pickups in my guitars. And I remember the first time I remember switching over and you're like, there's no way to go back. This is insane.
Yeah, no,
like,
you can't.
Ultimately you said 8,000 winds around, whether you're doing it with your hand or a machine's doing it and you set it, like, how much is it? Why does that make such a difference?
It's impossible to objectively answer that question. And it's impossible to scientifically answer that question and kind of say, because okay, well, the inductance is going to be X lower in a hand wound pickup, and but also this is going to be, because plenty of people make the case that if there's no measurable differences between a hand wound pickup and a machine wound pickup, then how is there any difference? And that as far as the wind is concerned, machine wound is just as random as hand wound, like according to, you know, the math. But we've heard it, and we're not imagining things, and I don't know why. And you're getting into when the physical technical world collides with our artistic sensibilities and our emotional response, and all of a sudden, you know, your guitar is 10 times more dynamic and responsive than you've ever played before, and you're just hearing things in a whole new way. I immediately noticed a clarity to the high end that I had never heard before, and an acoustic response that I had never heard before, and a dynamic response to where your pick attack and how you played was translated in a way that I had never experienced. And those things like that don't translate to scientific description very well. They don't even record very well. There's a video that the Throwback guy did where he's got, you know, he ABs a set of unpotted pickups and a set of potted pickups. And it's like, I really like the unpotted pickups, but that's a whole other thing. And he's sitting there in the room. He's like, oh man, it's like totally different. It's a totally different world. But it doesn't necessarily translate to recording it. It's a feel thing. And it's kind of like an in the moment sort of thing, and a connection, a responsiveness that I'd never heard before. I think that's really the word, is that they are the responsiveness that they had.
Well, you play light and it's clean. You dig in and it's, you know, it gives back. It's working with you. You're in it together. It's not just like on and off.
Yeah. Yeah. It just opened up a frequency kind of response that it was like there was a blanket on your amp and you took the blanket off. You know, it was like you had the EQ set flat and then you just opened it up.
I had that experience when I was younger. You know, I bought, I think it was like one of these, it was like late 90s, and a Fender come out with this like atomic humbucker pickup, I remember. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah. I never bought, it was like one of my first guitars, and I bought this thing and I thought it was cool. And I bought a vintage Bassman amplifier, and I was like, man, I'm really cooking. And I was like, I really want, you know, an older guitar. And I ended up getting this Melody Maker that had, someone had put like a real 70s Damasio PAF in the bridge, yeah. You know, like early first wave boutique situation.
Yeah.
And I remember plugging that thing into my amplifier, and it was a whole different ball game in terms of all of a sudden I could turn my amp up about two notches higher, all this headroom, clean room, clarity. The amp came alive. I had dynamics. It was like, this is a different situation from this, you know, factory, you know, whatever humbucker the Fender was putting out.
Yeah, man. It's once you get, yeah, once you have that experience, you're kind of screwed, you know?
Yeah. I have like the opposite experience, right? So like the first nice guitar I got was like a 60s Fender Music Master, right? And right. I bought it with a broken pickup. And friend gave me he's like, go send it to this dude, Curtis Novak, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I sent it to him. I got it rewound. He's like, get it extra hot, right? So then I just like my normal guitar for like my whole life was really super freaking nice. And now when I try to play other guitars, I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't quite sound as good.
Yeah. No, it's, you can't go back. It's like, once you have that, once you get that really good one, you know, you can't go back. Sure. Once you get the right pickups and the right guitar with the right amp, it's like you're just chasing the dragon, baby.
Like you say, I feel everything else feels like there's a freaking blanket over the speaker. Yeah. Like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
But, you know, moving forward, man, from the hand wound versus machine, and obviously all of our experiences, we've all been touched by this experience sonically and emotionally. But, Farhad had talked about specifically the gold foils. Like, I think he was talking about refrigerator magnets, something crazy with these construction. Like, that sounds totally different than the way we were talking about. Yeah. It's a whole nother ball game.
Right. Well, I've been in, listen. Let me tell you something, fellas. I've been inside of a lot of gold foils. Had my fair share of gold foils. None of them had a refrigerator magnet inside of them.
Oh yeah, okay. I don't know what he was talking about.
No, that's what they use now. That's what everybody's using now. They're getting these quarter-inch sheets of rubberized ferrite magnet, and then they're cutting out their magnets. And I have all of the Tescos were a hard, they were a hard ceramic magnet. All of the Guyatones, the ceramic Guyatone gold foils, the famous ones, they were ceramic. The early Tescos, the famous Tescos, they were hard ceramic. Most of the D'Armand gold foils were hard ceramic. There are some of the D'Armands I've found that have a hard rubber magnet. It's not like a refrigerator magnet. And I get my, so there's different grades of ceramic magnets, just like there's different grades of Alnico. Like, you've probably heard of Alnico 2, 3, 4, and 5. Those are the big ones. You also see Alnico 8 sometimes. The Dan Electros were Alnico 6, but those are the big ones. There's actually 30 different grades of Alnico if you get technical. And there's I think like 15 or 16 different grades of ceramic. So I found the grade of ceramic that matched the properties of all of the gold foil magnets. I didn't like go get it tested or whatever, but I found the one that matched everything that I could measure. And that's what I get all of my magnets are made out of for my ceramic stuff. And so like you were talking about Di Mazzario. Like, they're like super distortion or whatever. It was kind of like an early like ceramic hot humbucker. So if you're talking about like a ceramic hot metal, heavy metal humbucker, that's going to be ceramic 8, pretty strong too. So some of the old Japanese stuff was ceramic 5 and some of it was ceramic 1. And I use those different grades for different things. I mean, getting into that, getting that, that was kind of like the other thing that stuff was kind of cutting my teeth by taking apart the made in Japan stuff. It was like, that's what was normal to me. You know, this Alnico wasn't, I didn't see an Alnico magnet until like way, way later. It was all ceramic stuff, you know, because that's just what they used.
Pickups in some ways are a lot like speakers in the sense that there's Alnico, there's ceramic magnets involved, there's a conductance. So it's really resistance. Just like a
yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like
the opposite of a speaker, I guess, in versus out.
I think technically it's like it is the opposite of a speaker. Maybe. I don't know. No, a speaker's the opposite of a microphone.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's all still magnets and coil.
I grew up, you know, Eminence Speakers. I grew up the next town over from Eminence Speakers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still there.
Where's that?
Eminence, Kentucky.
Oh.
Grew up, born and raised. My beloved home state. My beloved home state of Kentucky that I left forever as soon as I was legally able to do so. Never. But no, they, there's like funny story about like Eminence. They were like, you know, because they made for years and years, they made like car speakers and stuff. They just made stock, whatever speakers, but I get, they decided they were going to kind of try to do some like nice stuff. And so they kind of started doing the amplifier things and they were like, let's, you know, let's have a really nice, let's make some nice speakers. So they decided they were going to do their Celestion speaker. And they were going to, you know, so they got a Celestion speaker and they were like, all right, man, we're going to go get the best baffles money could buy and the best magnet money could buy. And this is just going to be the best speaker ever made. Everything's going to be perfect. We're going to be super nice. And they did it and they hooked it up and it sounded like shit. It not only did it not sound at all like a Celestion, but it just sounded bad. So they were like, okay, we're going to go get the cheapest baffle we can find. We're going to get the cheapest magnet. Basically, they did exactly what Celestion did, was that they went and found all the cheapest stuff that they could and put it together, and it was like the best sounding speaker ever made. You know, so awesome. It's like you're at the mercy of what's available to you. You know, it's like, my imagination can do anything, but if I can't buy the parts or if I can't, you know what I mean? It's like, that's what the COVID thing has been like, you know, chasing gold foil, you know, single coil gold foil covers around planet Earth, you know, and like, there's 10 of them in Germany. There's 10 nickel ones in Germany, but there's, you know, 17 chrome ones in Belgium or whatever. I don't know who, but I bought these guys out. Like, Europe has no more. Europe is out of gold foil single coil covers because I have bought them all. And I don't know what's going to happen when I'm out, because they're not, they were like, yeah, we're back ordered and we don't know when we're going to get any more. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? Right. I need you to know. So it's, but that's just kind of what you're at the mercy of. But I don't mind that, because it's, I find it inspiring because it pushes me in different directions and I try new things and, you know, so, and I kind of like hunting for stuff anyway, so it's all good.
A lot of my searching online, you see stuff like an old pickup that's really expensive. Can you buy, like, you know, boutique stuff, handmade stuff, that it actually like replicates the sound of old pickups?
Yeah, you can. I mean, they didn't fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they were created on planet Earth. It's difficult to they were super inconsistent back then. And that's why the good ones are so good. You know, it was like, the magnets were less consistent. The coil wire was less consistent, but it was within that, you kind of average all that stuff out and you get a really great pickup. So it's difficult to replicate that exactly, because it's like, okay, you know, there's some guys out there that, like, let's say they offer like 10 different tele sets. And they say that they're 57 tele, you know, it's like, we took a 57 tele pickup and we had the magnet. We sent it to a metallurgist and they're exactly the same. And the gauze level is exactly the same. And the wire thickness, you know, is exactly the same. Okay, great. You know, it's just like, what does it sound like? Is it fun to play? You know, is it right for your guitar? You can copy that stuff and you can do it pretty much exactly. I don't have everything that I do on the website, but my, it's like my humbuckers are based on the post path pre T top patent number you know, Gibsons. That's kind of my go-to recipe because that's what I heard. That's what I've heard, and I really, really liked it. And it's kind of different than what other people are doing. And they get really close with pickups. What it is now, it's like you can get exactly what you want, but kind of it's kind of like be careful what you're wishing for. You know what I mean? It's just like because it might not be the experience that you are hoping that it will be. I've heard those like $400 Tele pickups, you know, and I've heard like the Seymour Duncan Tele pickup that's $65, and I've heard it sound better, and I've heard the other ones sound better, and it just but they're out there. You can get whatever you want. It's available. People can do it. And especially now, it's like with the consistency of the materials, it's like it can be exactly the same every single time, you know? But I don't know what that's going to add up to. And it, I don't know what it's going to sound like in your guitar, through your amp, through your playing. And I don't know what you, I don't know what your heart's desires are exactly. You know what I mean?
I feel like a lot of people think they know what they want, but they may not really know what that is.
Yeah, man, that's my life.
Yeah,
that is my life. Trying to, because I want to give people what they want. I'm basically in the service industry. It's like I'm selling an experience to people, you know, and I want to give them what they want. And sometimes I get the feeling that they're telling me the opposite of what they want. If somebody's asking for something very specific, I usually worry that they read that on a forum someplace and it's not going to be what they want. I can do whatever numbers they throw at me. I can do exactly what they want. That's fine, but I don't know what's going to happen, really, you know? So, but that's just part of it. That's just how it goes. I'm not into telling people no, especially when it's something I can easily do, you know?
You do take custom orders. So if anybody in the audience wants to reach out.
I mean, I do. I try to stick as close to the stock stuff as I can, but a lot of that stuff can be modified to pretty much whatever somebody's specifications are. And especially if it's like, do this a little bit hotter, do this a little bit less hot. That's no problem at all. It's like I tell people, it's just ask. It's like you're not going to know if you don't ask, I can't do it for you. You know, I'll definitely try, or I'll definitely we'll come up with something that we can do, you know.
I mean, you offer a ton of different pickups, like you said, in different shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
You know, really cool, even like Tort covers on like, you know, Strat style pickups. It's really cool custom work. I know specifically the Suprocaster seems to be your claim to fame pickup.
Just put me on the map, man.
Can you tell our listeners about that or what makes that so unique?
Well, it's based on an old, so National Guitars, which is basically encompasses National, Supro, Valco, and Airline. They were so far ahead of their time. National is my hero. They did the craziest stuff. They did it 20 years before everybody else. Basically, the Suprocaster, there's my guy. What do you got in there? Is it a...
Yes, dude.
Oh, it's an acoustic. Boo. Boo. But no, National's great. They were like, I think they were founded by, you know, two, like, I can't remember what they were from. I don't think they were Austrian, but they were two brothers that just like, they like walked off the boat and then started building National Guitars and made it like, you know, the coolest stuff. But their pickups were 20 years ahead of their time, doing crazy stuff. Suprocaster is based on one of their lap steel pickups. And it's really good I got really lucky with that one because it's not like something I get lucky with all this stuff. It's not like I sit down and figure it out on paper with a calculator. You know what I mean? It's like the Suprocaster was like the very first one. I heard it and I was like, this is what I've always wanted a Tele to sound like. You know, it's like a Tele pickup, but without the, like the high end kind of compression on the high end. Like the high end is a nice, smooth, open high end. The bass is tight, super dynamic, super acoustic, you know, super touch sensitive, in a good way. It was, yeah, it's been my big one. It's like, that's the one that like Mark Knopfler's playing it in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, how did that feel? How'd you even know that was going down?
What? Well, again, man, it's like my customers are the best people in the world. It's like Mikado, the head builder down at Pensa, he's into really weird stuff, you know? He hit me up and he was like, hey, I want to try this. It's like he asked me like two questions, and then he was like, he ordered like $700 worth of pickups. I was like, fantastic, great. But one of them that he did, you know, it was like Mark Knopfler and Root and Pence are almost like in brand, combined brand or whatever, you know, they just go way back. And Mikado said, yeah, Mark Knopfler was in here last night. He played a guitar with your pickups in it. He said he really liked it. And I was like, what? It's great. And then the next thing I know, he's sending me a video of him playing it at Madison Square Garden, Romeo and Juliet, man.
That's wild, man. I mean, that's kind of the goal. I mean, that's the peak, you know, of building these things, to have these mega famous stars that have sold millions of records, like playing through your build, man. It's wild.
It is, man. It is. I get such a kick out of it every time I hear one of my pickups, man. It still blows my mind. I still love it. And it's still magic to me because it's like I'm dealing with like these fundamental forces of the universe. I'm dealing with like the electromagnetic force, and I'm generating electricity with these little gizmos that I'm making. And every time I hear it make a note, I'm just like, this is crazy.
The name Gemini, you were saying earlier, you're a Gemini, and I see you're in a space Viking.
I am a Gemini.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that name?
Well, I'm always been super, super fascinated by the early space program. And I don't know if you've ever read The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe, but kind of that area. That was actually the Mercury program. Gemini came after Mercury and before Apollo. You know, I kind of said it and it sounded good. And I went from there, and it also kind of, it kind of captured the, I don't know. I don't want to compare what I'm doing to like landing on the moon. I don't want to sound too stupid.
You already did it. You just compared
that spirit. You know, I wanted to have that. I did. By saying I didn't want to do it, it was like, you know, I did it. Listen, all I'm saying is that what I have achieved with guitar pickups is comparable or greater to landing a human onto the moon, is all I'm saying. Not to toot my own horn. I'm just saying that I am a one-man NASA.
Making it happen.
All I'm saying. All I'm saying. I'm going to be sad when I leave the Tone Dungeon. But I will eventually. It's happening, man. It's happening. I'm very lucky that the company's we're going to be a real live company soon.
What's in store for the future, man? That's as you're talking about, you know, growing the company, getting a full-time employee.
Yeah, man. All of that stuff is like, you know, the small business 101 stuff is like, that stuff's real. And managing your time with a four-year-old, and we've got another one on the way, and you know, that's what you get wrapped up in. But you know, maybe fixing some stuff on the website would be nice. You know, maybe you know, fixing spelling things correctly on the website. But no, we're definitely moving into a bigger space. I've got, you know, dozens of pickups that I want to do that does not exist. You know, I want to keep the price point in the area that it's in, because I feel like I'm charging what I should be charging. You know, it's like the money thing's kind of, you know, it's kind of crazy, especially with like vintage instruments and vintage stuff. Especially, it's just like the price is just so crazy. So I want to offer people, you know, a good product at a good price, but man, I've got just so much stuff that I want to do, and I gotta try to squeeze out the time to do it. You know, I've got one guy, I'm hoping to get him up to full time. I need more than that. It's like the company wants it, and I'm excited and I'm lucky and, all of that stuff for sure. Years to come. Tons of stuff. Tons of fun.
That's awesome, man. I'm really interested in your Hilotron pickup that you have going on.
Well, okay. That's a really good one. It is basically kind of a hybrid of all of the Gretsch pickups. It is a humbucker. It is a full humbucker. So it's not exactly, it's kind of got the Hilotron look, but it is a full Filtertron pickup. So it's the pole pieces on one side and it's a blade on the other. So it kind of combines the Filtertron with the Tron that had the blade. I can't remember what it is. Supertron. So Supertron on one side and a Filtertron on the other. And it sounds really good. My buddy Paulie, Pasta Paulie, down at the Vision Street Guitars, number one guitar shop in the Hudson Valley.
Oh yeah,
Peekskill, New York, open Tuesday through Sunday, 12 to 8, I think. He's cutting some demos for me right now, and I'll have them up on the website. And it sounds really, really good. Filtertron is one of my favorite pickups, and up for debate whether or not it was the first humbucker or not of that style, because it was basically being produced parallel to the PAF pickup. Ray Butts over there at Gretsch and Seth Lover over there at Gibson working on their humbuckers at the same time, but apparently Gibson beat them to the patent office.
Right. Yes, the story goes. Yep.
But totally different beast and totally does different things, but they're an incredible pickup, and I'm really happy with how this one turned out. So that's kind of one that was recently added to the website. I'm working on a humbucker version of the Suprocaster that is based on, again, a national pickup, and it's going to be really, really cool, and still have that vibe and still offer something. You know, my whole thing is we were kind of talking about this, it was like weird stuff in a normal size. And it's like, I do want to offer and need to offer unique tone to people, but it has to be usable. It has to be versatile. I don't want to do gimmick stuff ever. You know, it's like I do the gold foils. I've tweaked them a little bit, but not that much, but I've tweaked them a little bit to make them more versatile and more usable. And they can cover a wide, you know, range of styles. It's like, there's this guy in Cincinnati, a jazz guitar player. He's got one of my Guyatone spec gold foils in the neck, and it sounds incredible. I mean, it's perfect. It's like the most beautiful. It's like the most beautiful jazz tone. And it's like, I've heard, then there's like, I hear garage rock guys, you know, playing the same pickup, and it's like killing it. And it's like, that's what I have to do. It's like, I want to offer people extreme versatility. And it has to sound really good doing all of that. Like, it can't be, I can't sell a pickup that's like bad at something. It's no good. I don't want to do it, you know? So So if I can do something really weird that I can fit in a standard size, but it sounds really good and it'll do a bunch of different stuff and I can make it for a price that seems reasonable to me, then that's, then it's on, it goes on the website. If I can remember to take a picture of it.
Well, hopefully your new employee can make that happen for you.
One of us has got to get a nice phone. I thought I was getting a better phone, but this is still not that great. I don't know. I need to get a real camera. I need to get a real camera. And, you know, it's like the Rising Sun humbucker, the Tele humbucker, the Tele size humbucker is the best pickup I make, but I don't sell a ton of them because I feel like people are a little bit leery of a single coil size humbucker, and I don't blame them. But that's a really cool one. And that's one I'm proud of because it's not based on anything. That kind of was from the ground up.
I think Brian and I saw one of those in an acoustic guitar. Do you remember that the other day, Brian? We covered it on our show. It was like a 7-string vintage Soviet acoustic, and someone had put a Gemini humbucker built into it. Yeah, it's probably on our Instagram.
I gotta find it.
It is, but it's sold. The link to Craigslist link went. I'm pretty sure that freaking sold.
But yeah, it was like a custom built sound hole pickup mount.
It was in Brooklyn, I think.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
No, it's awesome. Yeah. I use some crazy vintage Russian acoustic guitar.
I get so many vintage Russian acoustic custom orders that I can't keep track of who's going where.
Did you ever hook up with a Telenator in Connecticut? You know that guy? He's since shut down a few years back. Yeah, but he basically was, and if you follow the forums in like the 2005, 2006, 2007, nobody was doing a wide range properly. And he kicked it off.
I know that. Okay. Now I know who you're talking about. He found like a whole bunch of the new old stock Cunafee magnets. Yeah. Yeah. I do know now. I know exactly what you're talking about. And it was like, you know, they made these pickups, and then basically one day he was like, okay, we've got 7 left. We can't make any more. You know, so it was like, that was it. And so, from what I understand, they sounded phenomenal. They were great. They were great pickups, and the wide range pickups are incredible. I tweaked them a little bit the way that I thought that they should be, but man, I was kind of debating whether I was going to put the Tone Rangers on the website or not, because pretty much everybody was doing them, and I don't want to do something if everybody else is doing it. But I was like, man, I really like these. They sound really good. I'm proud of how they turned out. I feel like I do offer something a little bit different. So they're up there. And mine are one of the cheaper ones, but they're still expensive because they're a lot of work to do those the way that they're supposed to be done. But they're great, man. The vintage ones are great. I like how mine turned out. I'm proud of those.
They use the same cylindrical magnets as Strat pickups, which is why they sound like single coils, and use a 1K pot to get all those highs in. It really sounds like a fat single coil. It's really super cool.
I mean, without being in Seth Lover's head in 1970, the Cunafee magnets are pretty close to like an Alnico 3. They're pretty weak, but there's a steel base plate underneath of them, like a Tele pickup. So that will strengthen the magnetic field in that direction. It'll push it up. But they're pretty hot for what they are. And that's why they're so big. Like, I think that the vintage ones were all between 10.6 and 10.8. They didn't do a bridge and a neck, so they were all that hot. So you get it was kind of like building a really hot, really clear pickup that with the vertical orientation of the magnet, where you would still get the clarity and attack of a single coil, but you've got this big, massive humbucker too. And they sound great. And I'm doing them in the vintage size. I do them in the Jazzmaster size, and I do them in a standard humbucker size too. So pretty much all three of those. So they all sound good. They all sound cool. I like them. I don't do stuff I don't like. For somebody to be able to check out the crazy stuff and not, you know, have to chop up their guitar or like take it to somebody and pay a bunch of money. That's kind of my thing.
Well, we appreciate your thing here at Sonic Artifacts, Rob, for sure.
I'm here to serve the people. I'm here to serve the people. Okay. I'm the servant.
Man. Yeah. We're here to serve the deals and, you know, give inside interviews with you guys. You know, they're building all this awesome stuff. Yeah. In the aftermarket renaissance, I like to say, we're living in.
That's a good way. That is a good way of putting it. The stuff's out there. It's all out there.
Yes, sir.
Your perfect guitar is out there. Your guitar experience is out there somewhere. We will help you.
Yes, we will. And like you said, you can be contacted directly for any sort of custom builds. You have tons of options on your website, and we're going to provide links to the Instagram and then your website, just so everybody can find you. So again, Rob, really appreciate you coming on the show.
I'll remember this day as long as I live.
Until the internet dies. And that concludes this week's edition of our interview series here at Sonic Artifacts. Remember to please hit the subscribe button on your favorite streaming platform.
And check out our interview series featuring builders and musicians from around the world. You can follow all the deals on our Instagram at Sonic_Artifacts and become a Sonic supporter over at Patreon.
That's right. Catch us every Tuesday for the best deals in affordable vintage music equipment in Los Angeles and New York City. This is your host, Brian Chalemi, signing off from LA.
And your co-host, Max Braun, signing off from Brooklyn.
Get you on Tuesday.